We are thrilled to be joined by Wisconsin Badgers offensive line coach Eric Mateos. And, Coach, I got to start with this. I have the experience of hosting a lot of shows with offensive linemen, and they all tell Mark Tauscher, Derek Engler, some former Badgers, and they all tell me that their offensive line coaches were a little bit crazy. Are you a little bit crazy as well?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're crazy to choose this job. You know, it's like some self-mutilation a little bit, you know, and some issues. But, yeah, I think we're all a little bit crazy that get involved. But I think the guys that play the position are crazy, and usually those guys are the ones that become offensive line coaches. So, yeah, I think there's some for sure truth to that.
Coach, I'm going to start here. About a month ago, you had a tweet that pissed off some Minnesota fans, to say the least, which as a fan, I absolutely loved it. I despise Minnesota, and it seems to me that you've already embraced the rivalry pretty well for just having arrived. Can you give us your perspective on that, what ended up being some Twitter beef, and then what have you learned about the rivalry between Wisconsin and Minnesota since you have come?
Well, first off, if I can see from their perspective why that might have come across as like some ammunition, but if those that were paying attention during that week, I was highlighting players on our O-line and where they were from as we were getting ready for the 2028 open communication of the recruiting class to start up. So there was really no I don't know. I wasn't picking a fight, but the fight found me. And once the fight finds you, though, you got to fight. So I embrace it. You know, I'm good with it. I think when you get involved in these types of college rivalries, it's your job to embrace it. And to me, I represent, you know, my neighborhood. You know, I represent the people in Wanakee, where I live, and the people that hate Minnesota, I'm going to hate Minnesota right along with them. So, yeah, I don't know. I'm into it, though. I like rivalries. I've been a part of a few good ones, and I see nothing wrong with a little off-season skirmish every now and then. I mean, you know, it's the dog days of summer. It's okay to ruffle some feathers, I suppose.
Does that kind of maybe lean in a little bit to your coaching style as far as with the players, getting them to understand, to care, to that we are Wisconsin, that these rivalries matter, that everything you do matters, and kind of having, you know, some people use like that jerk in them, that little extra finish. I remember Badger offensive lineman back in the day would say like, hey, you play through the echo of the whistle, things like that, that kind of provide an edge that Wisconsin offensive linemen have often had.
I think that your players are ultimately an extension of you and your personality. And I think if I want our players to have a couple screws loose and to be ready to embrace confrontation, I think that the coach has to be that way a little bit. I think, you know, I gotta teach him how to talk a little trash but I think it's just like the mentality day in and day out of, an alpha male is not doesn't have to tell people he is, but after you kick his butt, another guy's butt, you can remind him that you just did it. And so I don't know that we're trying to create like a culture of trash talk and all that, but I think there's just like a mentality from the day one, like if I want our kids to be tough, I need to be tough. And if I want our kids to embrace confrontation and solve problems with aggression at times, then I need to show them how that's done. And that's part of teaching.
You talk about the mentality and trying to, coach what you want them to do, and they're an extension of you. I remember you saying when we talked to you in the spring that one of the things you're preaching to them is wanting guys to give it their all every single snap, not worry about conserving energy, which you say is an issue with a lot of offensive lines these days and the faster-paced offenses. Where would you say this group is at right now with embracing that mentality?
I certainly liked the progress that was made in the spring. I think from practice one to practice 15, you could see It doesn't just happen. It does start with a spark. You know, somebody has to be the first guy that says, okay, I'll do it. And then what you do as a coach is you put that guy on a pedestal a little bit, and you talk about, you know, how much you appreciate that effort and energy and finish. And then the other guy sitting next to him in the meeting room is like, wait a second, I want you to say that about me. And then the next day he does it a little bit more. And then the next day another guy does it. And then pretty soon that spark becomes, you know, a wildfire. And I don't know that we're not game ready. That's what training camp's for. But I'm really encouraged by the progress we made during the spring on that. And, you know, we got some fights, and, you know, fights are one of those things that usually happen when some guy goes a little bit longer than the other guy wants him to go. And, you know, it's my job to discipline those. We don't want to get people injured in practice, but, you know, there's a little part of you on the inside that's like, yeah, you know, if we're going to be who we want to be, we need to make sure that we're always finishing the rep and we're always the last guy to take our hand off the opponent. And practice, you got to be smart because it's your own team, and so you don't want to. But there's a fine balance there from, you know, being smart, but also you got to learn to do it at some point. You ain't going to just be able to show up in Lambeau and just say, okay, let me turn the switch on now.
When it's with recruiting, whether it's the high school kids or in the portal, what's the quickest way you can tell a lineman is someone that you want on their team? It's their feet, their hands, their attitude. Like, when you get into it, how quickly can you figure out, oh, that's a guy I want on my offensive line?
There's really two phases, right? So it's like the evaluation phase on the film. And when I see an urgency and a speed of play that gets my attention, when I see somebody that's puts their face down the middle of their opponent, you know, there's head turners and there's head butters, and then there's people that hit people flush. You know, head butters are kind of dumb. They just hit people with their head. there's face turners, which are the guys you don't even bother talking to them because they hit people and they turn their face sideways because they don't want, you know, their face. And then there's guys that hit people right in the middle of the face mask. And, you know, we're looking for get off, speed of play, and people that want to put their face right down the middle of people. And then once you talk to them and once you're get to know their personalities, it's, you know, what do you love about football? And make them really explain what they love about football. And do they love love football, or do they love being a football player? And right now in current college football, that's two very different things. Mm-hmm. Between love being a football player and loving playing football. So we're trying to find guys that love to play football.
Coach, you've worked with offensive coordinator Jeff Grimes before. What does an Eric Mateos offensive line have to do to make sure a Jeff Grimes offense succeeds?
Stay on schedule. Limit negative yardage plays is the most important thing in offensive football, especially in a conference like this, that has so many great defenses. And, you know, we want to stay on schedule so that way we don't necessarily have to be a drop back team on second and nine. You know, that's mm-hmm. not second and nine drop back is not where we want to be in this offense. And we want to stay on schedule, get 4 yards on first, give Coach Grimes an opportunity to play action pass or run it again on second and six, second and efficient. And then make sure on third down we're in position where, you know, we're in third or 3-5. That way we can run it or pass it, and we don't have to rely on too much drop back. And the truth is, you know, there's so many things that go into creating a good passing offense. And one of the main things is like, hey, are you staying on schedule with your play actions? Because, you know, the play action is not going to work on 3rd and 7. You know, they're going to have their ears pinned back and be ready to pass rush. So I think staying on schedule is really important and giving him the freedom to get the balance that he loves. I mean, we did a study. I mean, I think over all the years he's been a coordinator, he's damn near 50-50 run pass. And so I think as long as we're on schedule, we're pretty good.
when you kind of were offered the job and knew of Wisconsin as far as the offensive line, what were some offensive linemen that came to your mind, or what was kind of your mindset of the history of what we like to call, you know, O-line U here at Wisconsin? Because there's a long list of, you know, whether it's team Hall of Famers or NFL Hall of Famers that have come from Wisconsin, the offensive line. It's a great pride here in Wisconsin.
Well, the first thing I thought of was Coach Bielema. You know, he was the first D1 coach to hire me. I was coaching at a junior college, and Coach Bielema hired me his first year at Arkansas to be the O-line GA with him there. And I just remember, you know, his affinity and, you know, the talks that he would give me and Sam Pittman about, you know, his philosophy on offensive linemen. And you know, there's several guys I worked with. You know, I worked – Aaron Henry was there with me at Arkansas. And, you know, Chris Ash was there. Charlie Partridge was there. We were all there. And so, you know, I was educated on the culture of Wisconsin really early in my career coaching. So that was kind of the first thing. And then the second thing I thought about, I mentioned this before, but, like, I thought of Kevin Zeitler.
Oh, yeah.
And so, my first coaching clinic I ever went to as a young coach was right after Kevin got drafted by Cincinnati. And his coach, Paul Alexander, brought him up on stage at this clinic. He made Kevin come to the clinic. And he kind of, like, had him up almost like, you know, a show horse. Like, look at this freak I just drafted. And I remember seeing the guy. You know, I played D2 football. And so, like, I thought I was good, but I wasn't good. And so – when Kevin got up on that stage, I'm sitting there, I'm probably 22 years old. I'm like, yeah, like, that's why I didn't play D1 football, because that's what they're supposed to look like. And so, those two things kind of hit my brain first, is like, hey, you know, you can get a chance to go coach some guys that look like him.
Coach, you mentioned you were familiar with Wisconsin from your earliest days coaching. Now that you're here, what's been your favorite part about the city of Madison and being now a coach for the University of Wisconsin?
So I kind of had, like, a dream. You know, like, when you're starting to transition from, like, a young man to a grown man, like, you're getting done with college, and you start kind of picturing what your life's going to look like. Mm-hmm. And, like, I remember I had this kind of, like, vision for myself that I'd seen on TV and movies of, like, I'm living out in the country and I'm driving to the city for work, you know, and I live in Wanakee and I drive into the city, driving to Madison for work. And it just kind of feels like it's what I'm supposed to be doing. And grew up in Kansas City. So the Midwest manners and the culture of the Midwest makes me feel very at home here. The people are really good. Just down to earth people that, you know, there's not a lot of pretentious folks I've met in Madison. And I really just like there's a mix of new, cool vibes with Madison with some old school. I mean, I guess it's kind of what it's like when you live in a swing state, right? Mm-hmm. You know, like the balance of the people that live here, I think, kind of create what's really cool about Wisconsin and Madison. And I think that's the main thing I've enjoyed. And there's a lot of Subarus up here.
Yeah, I mean, yes, there are.
There's that's my it's not my favorite. I'm joking. But
Subaru drivers can be questionable.
So I will say, I've learned this from someone who worked in the Subaru. It's Madison, it's Austin, and it's, like, I want to say Seattle are the three biggest spots in the country for Subaru sales. So, if you know what, get into the Subaru dealership business is what I would suggest.
I remember the first time I drove in, and I got stuck behind two. And I don't know that they're Subarus, but, like, everybody here drives, like, these crossovers, you know, like, it's, like, not a car, but it's not an SUV. And I got stuck behind two of them going 500 speed limit. And I said, this ain't Texas. And, you know, because when you live in Texas, everybody goes 20 miles an hour over the speed limit. So, no, I'm just kidding. It's fine. It's just a unique observation I think I make every single day as I'm commuting.
Has that been the biggest adjustment, or what's been the biggest adjustment? Coming from Arkansas, growing up in Kansas, what's been the biggest adjustment to Madison and Wisconsin?
Not a whole lot. I mean, the things I've really enjoyed is, like, it's not 110 every day, you know, in the summertime. Now, today's a hot one, but you know, but for the most part, I've enjoyed like the mild summer. It's been really cool. And, but the biggest adjustment, I haven't really felt one. You know, I think, you know, in March when I woke up to go to practice one morning and I had a 4-foot snow drift in front of my driveway or in front of my garage, and I had to get the shovel out, you know, at 5 a.m. to dig myself out. That was a rude awakening. But other than that, I mean, this is great. City does a great job clearing the streets. I'll tell you that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I've lived a lot of places where they don't. And I've been, that was one thing I'd noticed when it snowed. It's like, hey, 2 hours later, you don't even know that it did. So I'm appreciative. Go Madison.
I had a couple kind of fun, quick hitters for you. One, how much cheese have you consumed since moving here? Or what is your food of choice if it's not the cheese?
So cheese consumption has gone up approximately 7,000%. So, no, it's been good. I mean, I'm trying to chill out, man. So when you move to a new spot, mm-hmm. you live in a hotel for a while, you know. Oh, yeah. So, I put on at least 20-piece during that time I was living in a hotel, and
the so cheese and beer will get you. Yeah, no, it comes on quick here, so it happens.
And the recruiting visits, and they just feed you. So,
yeah,
I'm doing a little better, but I've enjoyed the unique foods. I did the fish fry, and I've had a lot of cheese, and I haven't had a lot of Wisconsin beer, but maybe after the season we have a good year, I can really go down that path.
There you go. What's the loudest stadium you've coached in?
Oh, I've coached in some really loud ones. So I coached LSU for a year, so I mean that's a really loud place. Just Tennessee pumps in a lot of, they have a lot of people, and the fans are great at Tennessee, but they also pump in noise. I'm just going to say it. And so that place is really loud. They're, I mean, it's true, but they got great fans, and it's 100,000, but they also bring a few more decibels out of the stereo system. But I'll tell you what, we played Mississippi State the first time they had been number one in the rankings in like forever. You know, when Dak Prescott and Chris Jones were there, 2014, I think it was. It was the first week they had been number one in forever. And that game, even though that stadium's not very big, that game was probably the loudest game, just those cowbells and all that. And fans were fired up. They were number one. That was a really loud game.
Are you excited? Have the players told you about, like, the jump around and what it'll be like when it happens at Madison and what it means? Because over the last few years, it hasn't been what it should be. And when it is at its best, I always go to when Melvin Gordon broke the then record for most running yards in a game in three quarters against Nebraska. He did it by scoring a touchdown right before the start of the fourth quarter, and the place thought it was going to explode with the jump around. I think all Badger fans want that back, but are you excited for that that jump around?
Yeah, I'm excited. I've been working on it. You know, I've been getting the quads ready and the calves, and I think we got a little bouncy house at my house. I got two little girls, and I think right when we moved in, the first thing we did is we practiced our jump around. And so, yeah, I'm anticipating that. You know, I was on the other side of the last game at Lambeau.
Okay.
I was coaching for LSU.
Yeah.
And when we came up here in pregame, they played Colin Baton Rouge in pregame. And I'm like, oh, yeah, we got them. We got them today. They just played Colin Baton Rouge in Lambeau. And then when that jump around came on before the fourth quarter in that game, I said, oh, we're screwed. We're done. Like, I felt them. I felt my own vibe plummet. So I'm excited to be on the right side of that one.
Well, I know we hope that that's what all opponents are feeling after playing the Badgers heading into the fourth quarter this mm-hmm. season. And last one from mm-hmm. me, what is your message to Badgers fans heading into the fall of 2026?
I would say is this, that I don't know. You know, you never know exactly how everything's going to go before season. There's so many factors and unknowns. But I know this, when they watch these boys play, they're going to see some really tough, mean SOBs that are going to get on the line for the Badgers and the state of Wisconsin and the university. And they're going to be proud of the toughness and the physicality that they see on the field. And that there will be no doubt that that will be, you know, you'll be able to see that, and it'll be noticeably something that the fans can be proud of. And I know that I coach at a university where the fans are watching that. Not everywhere you coach are they watching that. And I know that the people here will be watching that. And, you know, it's going to happen or I'm going to die trying, making sure it happens, because we're going to make sure that they see that every single play. And they're going to have a lot of pride in how hard these kids play.
You know, if Riley was 200 pounds heavier, he'd be trying out for the Badgers offensive line after that right there. I'll tell you that for sure.
Yeah. You better take a few more trips to Culver's, buddy.
Right. Match the jersey patch. Will do. I'll see if I can put on my own 20 burger.
There you go. We'll get the cheese, beer, and Culver's diet, and you'll get it. So, Coach, we appreciate you taking the time to join us.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Nice to be on here with you. Appreciate you.
All right, appreciate it.
Thank you, Coach.
All right, this is The Jumper on the ESPN Madison and ESPN Milwaukee's YouTube streams.